Good morning, comrades. May we start with our meeting and request that our cellular phones be switched off so that they don't disturb our proceedings. Because even if your phone is on silent, when it rings, it affects the recording of these proceedings. So, whether it's on silent or vibrate, it does not assist. It just needs to be off. That's the only thing that can help us. And we, depending on everybody's ability to comply, comrades, MECs, we welcome you to Cape Town this time around. We welcome you to Cape Town. And really thank you for making time. We did get the apology of the MEC of Finance, Comrade Block, that he is engaged as where he would not make it. But we understand that officials from the department will be here. Well, from our side, I think there are no new faces. You by now know us all. I'm not sure, comrade, if there are new faces that we may need to know before we start. I'm not sure. I'll head over to. Okay.
No, thanks, Chair. We also appreciate the fact that we can be here and come on account. What I will do, I will ask my HOD to introduce the team that from public works side we have bring together, and then the HOD of health, maybe they have to introduce the team. Those who are new, that were not there in the first meeting, and any other person that is here. So HOD will lead. And that explains who is with HOD.
Good morning. Thank you, Honorable Chair. And also to the members, once again, it's a really a privilege one to be here and account on what we're doing. As you all know, the last time I introduced myself, I'm Colleague Leno Gwiliu, Head of Department for Roads and Public Works. And as the committee requested, we must bring more people who are involved up to the people who are running the project. So we have decided also, let's do that. So most of the people who are here are from the various areas that are part of the construction of the hospital. And with me in the department, I've got Mr. Papi Mutingwe, who's that side, who's in our legal unit. And I've got Ms. Gill, who is responsible for EPWP and Public Works. And I've got Mr. Keller, who's overseeing the project as we speak. And I've got Bradley Slinger, who is the Chief Director for Corporate Services. And I've got our CFO, Ms. Frida Tsimane, and Ms. Ruth Palm, who is responsible for roads. Those are the team from the department. And then I'll request from the side of the consultants just for them to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. My name is Louis Grammer. I represent Ntaba Resource and Project Management, and I'm the Project Manager for Mental Health Facility.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Bram van der Hoeven. I'm the Architect from Hospital Design Group.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Winston Mujai. I'm from Barbaric Consulting Engineers, representing Civil and Structural Consultants.
Morning, everyone. My name is Kenneth from Corbin Damote Quantity Surveyors. I'm a representative quantity surveyor.
Morning. My name is Elias Selimela, former HOD of the Department of Transport, Roads and Public Works.
May you repeat the surname?
Selimela.
Good morning, Chair. I'm also in new member of this team. I'm meeting with the committee for the first time. I'm the HOD for the Department of Health. My name is Gugulethu Matlaupane, and I have a pleasure to introduce my team. On my extreme left, I have the Chief Director, Infrastructure, Mr. Richard Jones, Chief Director, Infrastructure, EMS, and Quality Assurance, and Mr. Lisija Mabona in the same unit. And then behind me we have the office of the MEC, and I guess the MEC is going to take over and introduce the team from the EMS office. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. At that side, I've got my staff from the office. I've got Mr. Pauline Jack, who's the head of ministry. And next day is Brenda Lynn Jaliti, who is my PA.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. Honorable members, my name is Silo Mokoko. I'm the head of Treasury. This is the first time that I'm meeting the scope on this matter.
Right. Thanks very much. It will be recalled that we had our brief engagement in Kimberley on our way to Gauteng, coming from the Eastern Cape, to come and have a look at the Kimberley Mental Hospital and try and understand some of the challenges that have caused this unacceptably long delay in the completion of a mere hospital. We however cut short the engagement because we felt that we needed to engage at a much more deeper level than was the case. We would have loved to have come back to Kimberley ourselves, but circumstances beyond our control necessitated that we engage with you right here. I will hand over to Comrade Roy, not the MEC. Comrade Roy on this side. Yes, Comrade.
Comrade Chair, I think before we go into what is happening currently, and when finally, they expect this facility to be completed, I think we need to go into a bit of the history. And so there are one or two historical questions that I have. But this whole exercise is extremely important for the entire country, because our government is about to commit to, something like 1 trillion rand on infrastructure development over the next 20 to 30 years. And if we can't get it right in the Northern Cape, well, can we get it right for the rest of the country? So we need to know what continues to go wrong with this facility in Kimberley. Bearing in mind that this thing was first promised to the voters in 2005, it's now still incomplete. Maybe completed will be here in 2014. What's that, 9 years later? At a cost that has quadrupled from 200 odd million to 1.7 billion. Now that kind of thing in terms of both time and inflation of costs has serious implications for the government's infrastructure program in the country. And we need to know what you people have done wrong. So the first question I have is, if you can tell me, if I'm correct, it was Vista Park joint venture that was given the contract in 2006. I want you to tell me what kind of due diligence was done to ensure that Vista Park, yes, indeed, was able to complete the project within the stipulated time, which was, I think, 24 months. 2 years this thing should have been completed. 2014, we now say, maybe. Why? What diligence was done around Vista Park to ensure they were capable of carrying out this project?
I'm looking to my left to try and check whether. I'm trying to sort that one out, whether it should be public works that responds or it should be the treasury. Because I understand the tender was given by the tender board, which fell under the treasury department. Can
the
we
first
be
person off the street, they did a proper due diligence.
Honourable Chair, just to come in there, understanding this question was posed by the Honourable Member also in the last time, and we said there were some areas that we can't respond due to the fact that then there was a provincial tender commission, and the department only functioned as a tender committee, and by recommending and selecting, and if you look at the document that was prepared, we clearly outline in there that the recommendation that was done that is in the file, the contractor that was recommended by the department was the Greenica LTA and HSH. And then the tender board, through all the deliberations and their processes, awarded it to Vista Park.
Maybe just start and just say it slowly so that I don't lose it, I don't miss it. And maybe if you can just walk us through these documents so that we don't get drowned by them. Say, this document just says that this one contains such and such information,
yes.
This one contains such and such information, and then you can then go on and explain that part, because
yes.
I think it might be a very, very critical point to the whole mess that we've had.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. The document that I've given to the Secretariat of the Committee, the first part of it.
Just wave it so we can see. Just wave it. This one.
Let me take it out.
Yeah. Oh.
The very first document, the one with the, yeah, that one. This is the one. It outlines the process from the acquiring of the land. That's where we started. Up to the last contract, where we are now. That's what we did. Because we could see in the last meeting that the detail that was wanted, we could not have prepared for it. So we said, let's start to the land issue. Whose land was it? How many hectares is it? And how did you acquire it? From there, up to the bidding process, what processes were involved. So this first document gave an outline from the beginning, because we wanted now to come. And the other documents are annexes to what we refer in this document, like copies of the payment certificates others. This is the document, only this one. The rest is annexes.
Oh, okay.
Mm.
The thing which you make these documents before, and study them thoroughly, so we would then have very pertinent and relevant questions, but it will be useful. We'll have to go through these documents and see if there are anything's arising from them. But I think I heard you say Greenica was the preferred.
Yeah, comrade, I want him to start again on that explanation, very slowly.
Greenica was preferred, but Vista appointed.
Yeah, no, that's the answer I want him to repeat,
right.
So that we don't lose it.
And that is the first thing we would ask someone to investigate, why that happened. Let him carry on.
Yes, let me go through the document.
No.
On this area so that I explain
okay.
it much better.
All right. But briefly, so that...
We indicate here on the project overview that the project unfolded as follows.
On which page?
It's page 2.
Page 2?
Yeah, point 3.
Page 2 of this?
Of that one.
Of this
number
one?
3.
Right.
We said the hospital building contract was preceded by several smaller contracts which included entrance roads, sewer line, water supply, as well as the bulk, that part. The next paragraph we talk of the expression of interest documents for the construction of the new mental health facility were issued on the 24th of March 2005. And by closing tender, 12 tenders were received back. And they are in the annexures and the names of the bidders. By the 15th of April 2005. This process was only to evaluate prospective contractors on their ability to take on a project of this nature and magnitude. Only functionality was to be assessed, and those that meet a minimum set score would later be invited to submit their prices to be evaluated on price and preference. And then the process of pre-qualification and shortlisting of the tender has started. During the adjudication stage, the department discovered that the consulting firm used the outdated TP document of 2000 to develop the pre-qualification document. And as a result, consultants were requested to come up with a revised document based on the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. The revised document was issued to all 12 contractors on the 23rd of June 2005 and returned on the 27th of June 2005. Only 6 contractors then returned documents, with an additional document received late. The second pre-qualification was discussed at the Joint Departmental Committee meeting on the 6th and the 7th of July, 2005. The Departmental Committee again found some discrepancies in the evaluation reports from the professional teams. As a result of these discrepancies, the Department resolved to recommend to the provincial board to disregard the pre-qualification process and that all 12 tenderers that have responded to be in the first invite to be re-invited. The tenders were issued on the 25th of July 2005 and closed on the 12th of August the same year to all 12 tenderers. In this instance, only 4 tenderers responded, and these are the ADG JV, Group 5 Building Constructions, Clinica LTA and HSH, Vista Park Developers, and a tender report prepared by the project manager, which is Bagereki, dated 17 August 2005, was submitted to the department. We have the document also with us. Only 2 of the above 4 were found to be responsive, and these were Vista Park Developers on a 290 price and Clinica LTA and HSH Construction JV on the 324 price. And the department's pre-tender estimate was 301. The ADJV was excluded because their simultaneous projects were less than 75 million, and in the case of Group 5 Building Construction and Umtumbi Construction JV, there was no valid tax clearance certificate submitted. The department recommended Greenica LTA and HSS Construction to be awarded as the highest point scorer, and the minutes of the joint DEC and DAC are there. Then this was referred to the tender board because they need to make the final decision on this. The tender board, however, resolved to award the project to Vista Park Developers, Joint Arc Investment. The document is also there. So those are the processes, because we are not part of now that process in the tender board, because it's also a process on that they evaluate. So that's hence we said on the final approval of the issuing of the tender to the company, that's where we could, the last time as we said, we could not explain that part.
Right. I think that's fine. I allowed you to take that long because clearly that's very, very critical part that laid the foundation for everything else. Commander Roy?
Well, at some stage we've got to ask the question of somebody why this decision was made. Somebody must investigate why the preferred bidder, the one recommended by the department, was in fact not the entity given the contract. I think we need to note that down. That, I don't think that question can be asked and answered here.
Well, we don't know. Let's check.
Or could it be? We need a reason as to why
that decision was changed. Was there a letter written? Was there reasons given why that change?
But I think as we go along, we need to note questions that require an in-depth investigation, and I would recommend when we discuss this as a committee plus other SIU, what do we want them to investigate? And I think you're quite right, Chair. The rot starts here. This is where the rot sets in, right here with the appointment to the contractor.
Can we check HOT? When the tender board decided that they are going to take Vista Park, was there any formal communication written down? Were there any reasons given? Is it contained anywhere in the annexures? Was there any formal communication that we can lay our hands on and say, this is the communication that said, not Greenacre, but Vista?
And why?
Robert Chair, can I ask the legal advisor of the department to check if there's any such document?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think I'm not in a position to respond to that question precisely because my involvement at that point is based on the records that were there. I think the people who were involved in the process are here today, and I think Mr. Slingers and Mr. Sidemela will be in a position to respond to that.
Yeah, I think what one, if I give comment to one, you see, on page 3, you say the department's recommendation was for Greenacre LTA and HSH Construction to be awarded as the highest point scorer. See Annexure E. Minutes of the joint PEC and PAC of the 22nd 8, 2005. Then immediately thereafter, you say the tender board, however, resolved. So did they resolve in a meeting? Are the minutes of that meeting? And after resolving to award the project to Vista Park Developers and John Ark Investment JV, was there any communication? I think that's, do we have something in black and white written that says this is our decision? And in that black and white, are there reasons given or they just said, well, this is our decision and leave it at that? Yes, Comrade.
I might not help on the direct question, but I want to help because I'm worried. Look, my understanding from the department, and that's what I want to be, they must be clear on. In terms of the records, because that's what we are dealing with, historical records, those who claim they were not there. In terms of the records, my understanding is that there was no letter. Therefore, we have resolved to brought those who were there at the point when the decision has been made. So I thought the point that the HOD would have raised is to say, we don't have it. If anybody who were there have it, must just reveal it here. And that's I think, the point the public was there to make. They don't have records as far as they have informed me. They don't have such a record. The guy that we brought, who might have been any information around this, Mr. Salim Mahler, the HOD of finance is here, so it's up to them to assist if there's any assistance.
Are you making a follow-up? I wanted us to check with them first whether they can help us. Ntate Silimela and Ntate Mokoko, what documentation is there that talks to this decision of the tender board? Yes, it does.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Chair. at that time, what used to happen is that after the bid adjudication committee had made its recommendation to the tender board, after due process in the tender board would write a letter via the CFO to the HOD informing them about the decision that so and so has been appointed. Then on the basis of that letter, the HOD then would write a letter to the appointed person and say, you are hereby appointed. That was the process.
So in this particular instance, what happened?
It happened exactly like that, because it means, therefore, if the HOD would write a letter and inform the tender about the winning of the tender, it would mean he shall have acted beyond his powers. You'd first wait for the tender board to tell you their decision, and then you pass on that decision to the applicant or to the tender. That's exactly what happened here. In fact, that has been processed all along until we had our own delegations to deal with tenders directly.
All right. Let him cook. What records are there in your department to on this particular?
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me say to the committee that at the time when these transactions were happening, I was fairly new. I had just joined the department, and one of my discomfort was the tender board, because in terms of the PFMA at that time, we were not supposed to have the tender board. As part of trying to regularize the situation, we then made a recommendation to EXCO that there's a need that, in order to comply with the PFMA, that we disband the tender board. I think the answer given by Mr. Selimela is the most appropriate, because at that time, he being the accounting officer was much closer to the processes. And the role of provincial treasury at that time was to be the secretariat of that tender board. But it was not making any decision. As a secretariat, you record. And before I came here, I tried to find out from one of the people that I couldn't bring what documents were available. The answer that I received was that the bulk of the documents were given to the Department of Public Works at their request when there was an initial investigation that into the matter, that after the contract did not go according to expectation. So that is why I say my understanding is that Mr. Selimela's response, I think, is the most appropriate. I haven't seen the letter myself from the department, and I've been trying this morning just to find out whether there was such a letter. I've just tried to download some of the information that I've been sent while I was traveling to Cape Town. I will see if the letter is among those that I have here.
And you check in the meantime. Comrade Sloan, I'll come back to you, share the follow-up.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm at the discomfort, Chair, by the treasurer. I hear the explanation, but I think we are very bit discomfortable, because the tender board is a board that operates within a treasurer by that time, even though it was later disbanded or whatsoever. I just thought maybe the provincial treasurer will be able to say what were the reasons. Why did they ignore the advice by the Public Works in terms of saying we prefer this contractor to do this work for us? I just thought maybe they will try to explain, but with the explanation, I just think maybe we are just rounding on and off and off on the same thing. I don't know whether we hitting the wall or we're going. It's progress. Thanks.
No, on the drill was smashed that wall. Yes,
I'm a bit disappointed though that the gentleman says that he'll look on his computer to see if there is such a letter. I would have thought that this was such an obvious question that he would have anticipated that the very first thing we would ask, were there reasons given in writing as to why the department's recommendation was ignored? It is such an obvious question. I realize he wasn't at the terminated briefing in Kimberley, but I would have expected the MEC and others to brief him fully on all documentation required by this committee. I'm very disappointed, number one. Number two, can I ask a general question? Should somebody not have asked, should you or somebody not have asked at the time, why are you not adhering to the department's recommendation? Somebody should not have asked the question. And number three, is it not possible, if indeed you don't find the documents, is it not possible these documents could be with the former Scorpions? Because I'm informed, Chair, there was an investigation by the former Scorpions into this matter, and that they in fact took a large number of documents. Now we need to establish too, to what extent the Scorpions investigated this matter, if there is going to be a further investigation, and they have documentation, it's very important that that documentation is secured, we know where it is, and it is passed on to any further investigators. But I'm very disappointed. The gentleman is coming to say, in a sense, he's not sure if there is such documentation or not. That is why we terminated our hearing in Kimberley, because people came unprepared. I'd expected a full plane load. The planes that fly between Kimberley and Cape Town are fairly small. I would think that an entire plane load of people would have come well prepared.
I think before I give Dr. Rabi a complete MSC, I think, like we're saying, this is the cardinal point, because it then determined everything else that followed. And now we're trying to get the logic of why certain decisions were taken, which have had this far-reaching implications to the process. Now, we understand that when there was an investigation, a lot of documents were handed over to the Department of Public Works. And from what we are being told from Public Works, that communication, that letter, is the one that is missing, which will then clarify us on why. Why was the recommendation of the bid adjudication committee not followed? Because then that would actually establish whether there was any deliberate move, whether there were any interests that were being secured, whether there was anything. Because I'm sure the next question would have been, who were the members of the tender board at that time?
And who was Vista Park?
And who was, well, we've asked that question, who were the directors of Vista Park? Are we able to get that answer in terms of who were in the tender board, who were the directors of Vista Park?
We, after your last request, we have brought that information of the directors of Vista Park and
where
of
is
the
it?
Current contact.
Where is the Vista Park information in this document?
It's stapled to the first document you were just looking at, the summary report. It's stapled to the back of that report.
The one with the colour. Yes, it's, I think it's the last page in there. It's a little spreadsheet at the back.
We'll just check it. It's part of the document. I will just make sure that we've got it as a printout of that. We will.
But yeah, no. I mean, the last page indicates two people, Andrew George Scholes and Leonard Bongani Sibisi. Those are the two names. All right. And do we have the names of the people who were in the tender boat?
Chair, I will not attempt to answer the last question posed by the chair because I don't know who were on the tender boat. However, the records show that the directors of Vista Park at that time was Scholes. And it also, the CPRO printout shows that there was an entity, SEC, called Bloemfontein Boekhouwers and Secretariële Dienste. Those were the two. That was now for Vista Park. Now for Joe Ark, which was now the JV partner, Joe Ark, it was CBC, and also that specific entity called Bloemfontein Boekhouwers and the Secretariële Dienste. So that entity is the common denominator between the two companies.
Well, my Afrikaans is not that good, but Bloemfontein, I understand. Boekhouwers, it must have to do bookkeepers and Secretariële Dienste, secretarial services. So it's a bookkeeper and secretarial services having shares in a company that's supposed to construct a hospital.
You buy a second-hand vehicle, motor car, from a company called Bloemfontein Boekhouwers. But here we go and give them a 200 million rand contract. I mean, just the very name, Chair, I would have said, hey, who are these people? Let's investigate. Just the very name. Nothing else. Never heard of them. Fly-by-nights. But who are these other? Who's this part of this? Do you have a breakdown of who these people are? I mean, who is this entity? That must consist of individuals. Can we have those names?
Yes, we did do a search of the entity to find who the parties were. We found the name of Bruver. I think it was Bruver, the name that we found. What we also found was that this Bruver or another Bruver was also the auditor of both Vista Park and Joark. I think the name is a CC, is the name of the CC, and then the member is Bruver.
Now he's a partner and also the auditor for these two companies. I think
no, Chair, I'm not saying that. I'm saying there's a name of Bruver who is also the auditor of the both companies, but I don't know whether it's the same Bruver who is the member of...
It must be brothers.
Yes, yes.
Or it must be the same person. But I think what Comrade Roy is saying is that a little bit of preliminary investigation would have indicated that, look...
Why was he not due diligence? I mean, that's the big question, ultimately, is under what circumstances and why were the people given a 200 million rand contract? That is the big question. You won't be able to answer now, but Chair will require further investigation at a high level.
Yeah, John, I wanted to suggest that maybe we need to say this lack of due diligence, which is now costing the country over 800 million, does need to be looked at in terms of why was this not, in fact, why was the tender awarded to these people? That's why that letter would have been very important in shedding the light to us in terms of the thinking, and the person who would have signed it to say, I'm signing on behalf of the tender board. We are satisfied that Vista Park is far much better than Greenacre, LTH and whatever other companies. So I think, Comrade MEC, I think it is an area that we're not yet sure how would one this investigated, but at the level of principle, I think that is what we want, because that has costed us more than 800 million rand as a country. Yes, sir.
Sure. I think rather than look at the letter alone, one has to look at the minutes of the tender board, because the letter is a summary of the proceedings of the tender board of that day on that issue. So it will be letter and minutes of the tender board.
Do you have that? Do you have that stuff?
No, I don't have that.
All right, let's continue. I think maybe what we need to say, Treasury and Public Works, let's go and hunt for the minutes and the letter of the tender board. And I think we also need to establish, I'll be worried if we're not able to, who were the members of the tender board? Who were the members of the tender board? Who was the chairperson of the tender board? I don't think that should be, I'm even suspecting that this limit, surely you should remember who was chairing the tender board at that time.
Because I won't remember precisely, because they were changing from time to time. I don't precisely remember at that point in time. But if names have to come to the fore, it's a number of names, but they may not specifically be for that time, could be later, at a later stage.
Can you, I know you are no longer in the department, you're the former HOD, pen down the names that you recall to have been there and make them available to Ntombi? That will be the beginning of us having something to pack. That should mark the beginning of that process of finding out who was involved. Continue, Comrade.
Another historical question. By 2007, it became apparent that the construction was too slow, there was poor workmanship, that remedial work was not being done as it should be done. My understanding is that when that happens, the contract should be terminated at the first sign that the company is unable to deliver. This thing should have been terminated in 2007. Why was it not terminated, the contract with Mr. Park in 2007? Why did we continue to pay our funds all the way through until 2009? Why not early in 2007 was this contract not terminated? You allowed it to continue, wasting funds, wasting funds, wasting funds.
That is the mission.
Thank you, sir. At the time, as the member is saying here, that things were appearing to go a little bit wrong at the 2007, and why was the contract not terminated? Unfortunately, at that time, I was not in the department. It was during the time when I was out of the department for a period of about 14 to 15 months.
Why? Hospital? So why? So you were out of the department? You say you were out of the department for... The dislimen?
Yeah, there you are.
You say
okay.
You were
yes.
out of the department
yes.
for about 14 months?
For 14 months,
so why?
Yes.
Were you in hospital? What was happening?
No. There were some misunderstandings that happened, and then I was removed from the department for that period of 14 to 15 months.
Did it have anything to do with this contract or something else?
Quite a number of related issues, not necessarily this one.
Related? How?
Yes.
How?
Well, it related to my work as an HOD in the department, my implementation of the PFMA, implementation of policies in the department, which was not, you know, well received by my employer. Therefore, there was a big issue. Then I was removed from the department for 14 months. Then I came back later on. But during this period, I was not, it was a period of that type of thing that was happening.
All right.
Who was in charge in your absence, and who was the NEC?
Mr. David Roy was not the MEC at that point. He was not in the department. At that time,
that part we know.
he was not in the department. I think the MEC who was in the department at that time was the MEC Mulusi.
That's the second big question that must be asked and answered by somebody. They showed early on in 2007 they were incapable of completing the project. It was costing money already then. And we need to know why the contract was not. And that's the normal course of the procedure, in my, as I understand it. That as soon as things start going wrong, you terminate the contract. In this case, for some very strange reason, it was allowed to continue and continue. That's the second big question I think we have to ask. Somebody has to investigate. Why did that happen and who was responsible? And people have to be able to count on.
Can I? Yes, the MEC was Mulusi. And then who was acting in your position at that time?
Immediately after my departure, the Director General at that point was Dr. Michael Hendricks. He acted for some time, and then thereafter, Ms. Ruth Palm, she is here, she acted for the remainder of the period of my absence until I came back to the department. Ruth Palm.
Just get it right. The name is Ruth, and the surname is P-A-M. So she's here, that's you. And Mr. Hendricks is not here. All right.
But was this lady in charge during this period? Can you perhaps tell us then why this contract was not terminated? When it became quite clear that these people could not complete the construction on time?
At that stage, the contractor experienced he gave an indication he was experiencing cash flow problems. And then a meeting was held between the three MECs, the MEC of Health, Finance, and the Department of Roads and Public Works, to see how we could remedy the situation. And alternatives were basically investigated in the sense of seeing whether he could not possibly cede the contract or bring another contractor on board, etc. So at that point in time, he also gave the undertaking that he could complete it, because in that very period, he gave an indication that his cash flow problems has now basically improved. So after that...
Maybe let's do it this way. You acted from which period to which period?
It is from round about October 2006 until the end of January 2008.
Right, and during that period that you were acting, how much was paid to the contractor? In how many installments?
I'm going to ask the professionals that are here basically just as far as the payments were concerned. Because remember, by the time the contract was handed over to the contractor, certain things weren't also right at the site, like the foundation. So in that period, he also had extension of time due to weather conditions, due to the foundation not being right at that point in time. So I'm just going to ask the professionals that assisted Mr. Mutai and Mr. Grammer as to the amount of payments that has been made.
Maybe for the payment, that is limited. When did you experience your problems with your employer and you were stopped from acting in your position? When did your suspension come into effect?
From late 2005.
It would be late November, October, December.
It would be mid 2005. That's when we experienced problems in the department.
Is it mid or late?
Mid 2005.
So mid 2005 would be June, July.
Yes.
All right. 2005.
Yes.
So from July 2005 until October 2006, it has
been... No, let me just correct that. The problems were simmering at that time from mid-2005. Then the actual removal from the department was preceded by being on leave for around 2 months. That was in June 2006. And then October 2006... That's when I was deployed, so to say. I was deployed to another department. That was October 2006. And then there was a court battle that ran for a couple of months. And then I was, reinstated, so to say, in February 2008.
Yep.
During this period, when you were there and you were coming back, you asked Mr. Park for completion strategy or completion program. Now, they made certain undertakings which they could not fulfill, but then you, I'm not sure which one, allowed them to continue for another 20 months, again failing for 20 months. Why is that? You ask them for completion strategy, they can't give it to you, or they can't live up to it, but then you simply allow them to carry on anyway for almost 2 years. Who must answer to that, you or you?
At that stage, look, Mr. Grammer investigated some issues, which were the issue of financial backers and things, and the contractor was not going to, he didn't want to concede to certain of the conditions that was put in. And at that stage, Mr. Mesilamela came back in the February of 2008. I started acting in the September of 2009, and then by the December of 2009, I terminated the contract.
Okay, did you report back to him that you'd asked the, Mr. Park for a completion strategy? You were given certain undertakings, and Mr. Park continued to fall back on construction. Did you report that?
We had meetings with the department.
If this is reported back to you, why your first order of business not to terminate them?
Maybe one needs to.
You allowed them to carry on for another 20 months?
Let me just explain that. Mrs. Palm is correct. During my absence in the department, there were various meetings that were held with the department until I came back. Then when I came back, we continued, as she's rightly saying, we continued to have meetings with Vista Park, meetings with engineers and so on. But I think an element which maybe is being omitted here, which is not being told why we're almost like tied, our hands were tied at our backs. But the reason that Mr. Scholes was quite a unique contractor in the Northern Cape, unique in the sense that you never hear of a meeting from him to you as the HOD to say, I want to talk to you about that and that and that. You'll always hear that from the MEC. In other words, Scholes was doing, he was using the open door policies that the MEC was having to have his way, and then when it comes to you, it's like, it's an instruction. So at that time, at that point in time, I need to mention it, because it's a serious statement I'm making, but it was just like that. As an HOD, you could not just stand up and terminate a contract of this magnitude in the Northern Cape. You'd be doing that at your own peril. That's the point number one. Point number two.
We must ask the MEC at the time why he allowed this contract to continue after a completion strategy failed, after the company was not able to live up to the expectations, openly not able to do so, but he allowed the contract to continue another 20 months. He must answer that, whoever that MEC was at the time. Because there seems to be a very close relationship between the contract and the MEC at the time.
All right, Comrade Chinwana. Oh, yeah, Dr. Rabi, I'll come to you after Comrade Chinwana directly.
Yeah. Thank you. I just want to check with Ms. Palm and the former HOD that since they are explaining that it was a difficult situation with this contract, but one thing I'm just struggling to understand, was it also difficult to levy the penalties? Because I think that is a paper thing. Why was it difficult to levy this contract? Because by the time the contract was beyond the working limited period as agreed, with 565 days on the 20th of March 2008, his penalties has accumulated to 11.3 million, but they were never levied. Are we going to be convinced that that was the reason, because there was an open discussion or an open relationship somewhere with the politician, the MEC, to levy? Because that, I think that's an easy thing to do if you're in office. Levy, that's it's just to comply with the regulations and agreements of the contract.
At the time I was acting, the penalties issue wasn't a questionable issue in the sense that a contract extension of time due to the issue, as I mentioned earlier, the issue of the platform was about 114 days and the rainy weather about 17 days. So the contract completion date would have been the 20th of March 2008. So the penalties at that point in time wasn't an issue to have been levied. And the payments, according to the QSs, that the payments were only made on work done, basically. So the penalties would only have been effected as from the period of March.
Dr. Rabi?
Sorry, on that, I'm not understanding that. Because my information is that penalties of 20,000 rand per day were levied, actually levied, but you didn't bother to collect them. And as my colleague says, by March 2008, these were now 11 million rand. So I'm not quite understanding your answer. It was towards the end of the period when you were acting and when you returned. So we need to get an answer from either both of you or one of you as to why the 20,000 per day was not collected. It was levied. You said you owe us this money, but you never said pay it up. So as my colleague says, these things accumulated to 11 million rand.
What has also happened when we also went into detail and in investigating this matter, we have come across a letter where the project manager within the department gave an instruction to the professionals not to levy the penalties. And I was not aware of this, and I think neither was Mr. Selamela aware of the letter that this individual has issued to Mr. Gramadin, not to levy the issue of penalties. Unfortunately, you know, they say a dead man tells no tales. The individual is passed on, and he is not here today to give the rationale as to why he has issued this letter without our knowledge.
Sure. I just want to check the individual who's no more. What position was he holding in the department?
He was the chief director of infrastructure at that point in time. He headed all the projects, public work projects within the department.
Was there no monitoring, I mean, of people senior to him? I mean, it must have been general knowledge in your department that 20,000 per day had been levied, but these amounts had not been collected, and questions asked as to why, irrespective of that letter. I mean, you as the most senior person there, and when you came back, surely you should have asked yourselves why these amounts were not being collected. If you had asked that question, you would then have uncovered the letter, and while the gentleman concerned was alive, you could have then taken action against him or asked the relevant questions. But you seem to ignore these things completely. It's a case of it's not your money, it's the government's, so it doesn't really matter.
Unfortunately, of the certificates did not come through me as the head of the department. And there was also the issue of that you could always recoup...
As head of the department, you did not know that 20,000 per day was being levied.
You could also recoup...
You did not know 20,000 per day was being levied.
Of the penalty?
Yes.
No, not at that point in time. But we could also recoup it from the retention monies that was owed to the contract, when the contract should come to an end.
Before Dr. Rabi, I think Mr. Slimela want to put some more.
I just want to add also, Chairperson, to what Ms. Pan has said. I've already said, when Mrs. Calls would approach the department, he wouldn't come and talk about his lack of progress on the project. But 90% of his approach to the department revolved around money. Revolved around non-payment. In fact, I remember in one meeting, we said at that time, if I remember well, the penalties were at the region of 7.2 million rand, which Mrs. Calls denied. After that, we could see that, because at that time, we were only advising on the project, the purse and the money was held by health. I met with the HOD of Health. We discussed all these sort of things that were happening, and then we resolved that I think time has come where now we must approach the executive. I think if Ms. Pam or one of the senior managers in the department at that time could go into their laptops, there is a memo which was, you know, we had already written, which was supposed to be signed by myself and that HOD of Health to say now we have had enough. We're approaching the provincial executive.
Did you approach the NEC?
Yes, the NEC was aware. I did discuss these matters with him, but the NEC would normally say, look, discussions are there. There is a possibility that this matter may be resolved, but the NEC was fully aware of this.
Do you mind me who this NEC was? And is he still around? Huh?
Chairperson, if I may also add, at one stage we did hint this to the portfolio committee. M.E.C. Davidroy was part of the portfolio committee. He may remember we were hinting about these frustrations which we were having. When he took over as M.E.C., we hinted to him the frustrations which we were having about this project.
Right, Dr. Rabi, please. He has been very
thank you, Chairman. Chairman, my first question is, Ms. Palm, your present position, you say you were acting Chief Executive Officer at that stage. What is your position within the department now?
Chief Director of Roads at this point in time.
I see. My second question, Mr. Chairman, is that who was the quantity surveyor when you were the acting head of the department? Did you get any reports on the quantity surveyor? Because in 2009, when you terminated the contract, there was an overpayment of almost 60 million rand. I think the initial contract was 290, and I think you eventually paid them about 350, 360. Did the quantity surveyor or the project manager, did they report back to you or not while you were the acting head of the department? Thank you, Chair.
in that period, as I said, the project manager representing the department was Mr. Motisi. And the biggest issue was the slow progress, but also because he didn't have the cash flow. I didn't have meetings at this point in time. The quantity surveyor was Mr. Dina, right? But the biggest issue was the slow progress and the mere fact that he didn't have the cash flow. And the situation is, at that stage, is when you're acting, you're confronted with the situation now. If you totally terminate, the cost implications at the end of the day when you have to reappoint somebody else. But I say the undertaking was always given there that he had got his financial situation under stress and that he gave an indication that he could perform. But at the end of the day, as we know today, that basically didn't happen.
Chair, but surely, I mean, you could have asked him for proof. I mean, 50 million rand is a lot of money, Chair, overpayment of that. Was there no proactive warning signs or something like that? You mentioned that Mr. Scholes had an open door to the incumbent MEC at that stage, but surely I think somebody must take responsibility for such wasteful expenditure.
I don't recall in the time that I was acting there was an overpayment, but I'll ask the project managers just to respond as far as the issue of the overpayment.
I studied the documents that I studied, and I think it's deplorable that we only received the additional documents today, is that when you terminated the contract, I think more than 350 million was paid to Vista Park, and the original, the original contract was 290. So I'd like to have clarity on that from some of the other officials, please.
I think if you check on the termination date, it was way above, beyond the original date. So you would have had escalations. But I think maybe the big question that does need to be answered is, how did Vista Park get to be paid the 150 million for such shoddy work? How were they paid? I'm not sure who within the, you know, your layers of responsibility should answer this. How were they paid 350 million for work that is very, very shoddy? Are we to go back to that unique nature of Mr. Scholes in the Northern Cape as a basis for the payments that he used to get? Because the former HOD says 90% of the time when he came to the department was coming to demand money. And yet, he was not completing the job and he was building shoddily. Who was responsible for approving to say, this is correct, this is all right, we can pay? Who was responsible for that?
Honorable Chair, I also need to refer you on the issue that we just discussed to the same document on page 4 that talks about the 11.3 million. It also gives a total breakdown that is happening there. For example, the issue of 565 days that the Honorable has been talking to and the 11.3 million. It's part of the issues that we said are part of the approach that we're taking in investigating with the new terms of reference. But if you look at the letter that is attached as Annexure G that was given to the professionals not to immediately deduct the penalties, that letter is crafted in such a way that it doesn't say don't pay. It says we will only deduct it at the end, at the completion of the contract. You see, it's very strategically crafted. So, hence we say, and there is retention money also that we can talk about that is there. But the second part of where I want to highlight also, which is on the next page now, that talks to the financials. Maybe one of the consultants can indicate, because there's a lot of figures that we looked at. What is the basic contract saying, and what was paid, and where we are now with the amount that was paid to them, and what is outstanding or what's new that was not part of the contract. if they can just explain that financials, because we went into detail because we wanted to understand ourselves. This 1.7 billion that everyone talks about, where does it come from? Because in our books and our understanding and our calculations, it really doesn't come there. But if they can only, the first part, the second part of the escalations and things can be explained later. But let's look at the movement from 290 to the 350 that we talk about, what happened there. But also indicating the first part, why this 11.3 million was not deducted, because I said if you look at the manner in which Annex G has been crafted, it's such that it gives the leeway as if something will happen at the end. So can, with your permission, that I get the quantity surveyor to explain that second part.
Before that, it wasn't 350 million, it was 420. 70 went to professional fees. I also wanted like to know as part of that answer too, what the 70 million professional fees was, for what? What did they sign off on what? So as part of that, it's been answer please, what was 70 million spent on professional fees for what? What value for money did we get from the 70 million? Because it was 420 million that was paid out altogether for the time of the termination of this contract, not 350 million. We lost 420 million.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, if I may. Yes, on the quantity on the job. We're working from 290. That's what we know is the original contract amount. But I think it's important that we compare apples with apples. The 290 did not include escalations, did not include professional fees, contingencies, and variation orders. Why we had 340, or why have we paid the contractor 340 by the time
we terminated? So basically we are saying that that original amount of 290 was misleading.
No, it wasn't misleading.
Well, in the sense that it created a false sense that it was going to be cheaper, when actually, once we started, the costs were going to shoot through the roof.
I wouldn't say it was misleading, but to some here, you might read that misleading, but it was not all inclusive. That's what I'm saying. It was only the contract and the amount.
I think we're talking the same English.
Yeah.
I'm saying it was not a complete picture of what the costs were going to be.
Correct.
All right, continue.
Yes. Had Vista Park finished the project as originally expected, we could have ended up at 566 construction cost only, not the 290 that we're talking about, because of variation orders, escalations, and all those other stuff that I mentioned. Including professional fees to that, we could have ended up at 950. Not 950, sorry, my mistake. Yeah, okay, I didn't work out the fees on that, but for only construction costs, it could have ended up at 566, and our professional fees could have been based on that. So, could have been professional fees plus 566.
So, would you say that it was correct to say the hospital will cost 290 million?
With the original contractor, 290 plus variation orders and escalations, yes.
But is that a correct price to use 290, to have used 290? Was that a correct price?
As the basis, as our start is, I would say yes, it was the correct price then when it started. But obviously, we know in construction, with escalations taken into account, it won't end up at 290. Any variation orders that could have happened or that happened in the process.
Is that normal and correct?
Was it?
Is that normal in the construction environment, and or was it correct to then say this is going to cost 290?
I didn't know who said 290, but when the contractor intended for that amount of 290. But like I said, to that we are supposed to add escalations and variation orders.
And those were not added?
Those were not added at this stage. That was just his accepted tender amount then.
So you're assuming escalation costs. I understand escalation costs as a result of failure. Am I right?
Come again.
What are escalation
costs? Escalation costs to date, when we paid the contract, was around 66 million.
What does it mean, escalation costs?
Not failure to perform is increase as you go along, other than material cost and all that.
Well, that is lacking in bad budgeting, man. That's what it is. If you budget for 290, that's it. That's your budget. You must include all of that.
There was no
budget ahead. There was no budgeting. Thumb suck a
little bit. Yes. Chapman, I know sometimes, maybe because we are not in the department, but part of our job is to watchdog over the public press. And, you know, as he's just explaining, I'm failing to understand why is it so difficult. People, when they talk, whether it's 1 million or it's 2 million or it's 3 million to a sum of 550, like you say, it seems like it's nothing. I just think maybe there's something wrong in my head. Because people talk like it's nothing, it's escalation fees to have gone to that way. But really, for us to move as a country, you know, I just wanted to share, because you said I wasn't talk. I wanted to go back to that issue of 20,000. To say, you know, in this committee we deal with rents and cents. And you've got this PFMA of 1999. And I fail to understand whether you are an acting HOD or you are a full-time HOD. In terms of section, chapter 5, section 38, the general responsibilities of an accounting officer, they are clearly stipulated in this book. Why is it so difficult for us to follow the rules of this country? Because you come and say it was 20,000. There was just a letter, there was an agreement somewhere out of the corridors with someone. That contractor will come, 90% for him to come to the office was to claim for money. But why didn't you use this book? Why is it so difficult? Because we'll round and round and then we'll get the explanation to say, no, contractors, when we have a job, we've got a project, it will escalate. Like, escalation is a norm. It is not a norm. It's poor planning, it's lack of oversight. Not lack of oversight by parliament, but lack of oversight by a responsible department. Because your work is to monitor and evaluate in terms of projects that are initiated by the department according to the needs of those people. But I'm just failing to understand, Chairperson, why is it so difficult? Thank you.
Dr. Ravi?
Chair, I'd like to agree with my colleague next week. Chairman, they've mentioned the name of Mr. Park or Andrew, what is his name? Andrew Scholes or something like that. But Chairman, whether we must accept that government money was misappropriated here, and we owe it to the public at large, to the voters, to the taxpayers there, that Vista Park or Mr. Scholes or whatever it will have to explain to us what happened to the amounts of money that was paid to him. The present situation is untenable. With due respect, Chairman, I was really in a state of shock when I walked around in that building there on site visit, and it's not acceptable. I mean, if you look how much money was misappropriated there, if you look at the shoddy workmanship and so forth, and we allowed that to carry on to something like 4.5 years, Chairman. And honestly, somebody must take responsibility for that, whether it's the MEC or Scholes. The present situation cannot continue. It's not acceptable.
No, it's fine. Yeah, no. I think there was a question I asked, who was responsible for giving the go-ahead for payments on the work that Vista Park had done? Ms. Park?
Your professionals, the quantity surveyors, who then work with your respective infrastructure chief director, because they would then sit on the various meetings. They would then certify the payments to say we are hereby satisfied that the work is done according to our satisfaction.
That is what I said. 70 million rand paid to professionals for what? To certify that the work was done and the work was not done. Now, who are these professionals? Have they been reported to their professional bodies for incompetence? And perhaps worse. 70 million rand of professional fees people signed off to say, yes, the work has been done to a satisfactory level. Who are these professionals? Who are they? Name
them. Ms.
Who are they?
All the professionals that were appointed at that point in time. We had a team of professionals.
We want to know the name of the team, we want to know who they are. They took our 70 million rand
They signed you for something that is worthless almost. We want to know, what action did you take against these professionals? You when you were going out, or you when you were coming back? Sorry, I can't remember the gentleman's name, Chair. But I want to know if either of them took any action against the professionals that were employed to certify that the work was properly done when indeed it was not done, and we paid the professional 70 million rand to do that. Now, what action, if any, was taken?
Now, let's start with, who are these professionals? Who are these people who said, job well done, pay?
Mr. Grammer, can you give us a list of all the professionals? I know there was quite a few. There was KDM, there was...
If you want a list of all the professionals, let's start from the top. The first project managers were Bavariki engineers. The second project managers in Tabara.
No, just a minute so we can write.
Sir.
Bavariki
engineers.
All right, just go through the names, but HOD, can we have that list sent to us of the professionals who... Yeah, just go through the list.
Okay.
Babereki.
Project manager, Babereki, consulting engineers were the first project managers. Then Ntaba Resource and Project Management was the second project manager. HDG, Hospital Design Group, are the architects. KDM Quant Surveyors were the Quant Surveyors. Mecan Engineering were the mechanical engineers. Wally Parsons are the electrical engineers. Sekelec are the security engineers. Urban Landscaping or Green Inc. is the landscaping architect. What else is there? And structural and civil engineers was Babariki Consulting Engineers.
All right. No, that's fine. Now, in terms of building, at any particular point or level where Vista Park would claim payments, who will be the critical professionals, or who will be the professionals who will say, we are satisfied, you can pay?
Okay, let me just explain what the certification process would be. The contractor would put in a claim with the quant surveyor. The quant surveyor would then distribute that claim amongst all the consultants. Each consultant, for instance, the electrical engineer would then go out and go and inspect the electrical installation and look at the claim, and then he would certify that he's happy with the electrical installation. Same with the civil, the structural, etc. And that input would then be filtered through to the quant surveyor. Now, the only consultants who do not certify for work that they are satisfied for is the architect, the civil, and the structural, because that is measured. The work done is measured by the quant surveyor. But the electrical, the mechanical, the landscaping, all the other engineers certify and issue certificates for work done and performed. That then goes and falls under the project quant surveyor certificate, and that gets signed off and gets forward to the project manager, who then goes through the figures, makes sure that he's happy with the payments and the deductions are correct, and then signs that off, and that goes then to public works for payments.
Now, can you then, based on that conceptual framework, can you then explain to us what then happened? Vista Park was paid, but now when you have Inyasi coming in, they've had to redo a lot of the things that were passed off as being okay.
Comrade Chair, you must remember that a number of years passed by between the one contract being terminated and the other one starting. So we've had several instances where there has been water damage, there's been rain damage, there's been wind, and as we all know, the elements in the Northern Cape is quite harsh. And those things has affected the building. I mean, if you have a look at the audit report, an audit report that was done by all the professionals at the time of termination, and you compare that audit report with the audit report that was done
at the commencement of the second contract, you would see that there's a vast difference. There's also been a lot of looting and theft on site, damage to plant, damage to machinery, damage to windows, to glass, aluminium that was stolen, roof sheets that was removed off the building. So if you really want to compare what state the building was in versus what state the building has now started at and what we've had to cost in for Inyasi, the new contractor, to redo, one can compare those two audits and actually see what the state is. But I really do believe that the time period in between the one building being terminated and the other one starting, that was a critical part.
Are you suggesting therefore that the way that Inyasi had to redo essentially arises out of the time lapse necessarily? And is that the sole basis on which some of the parts have to be redone?
No, Comrade Chair, I'm not saying that categorically. What I'm saying is that there is a portion that can be attributed to that.
No, that's fine. Then if there is a portion that can be attributed to that, let's leave it out. I'm interested in the portion that can be attributed to shoddy workmanship, because that was paid for in full.
No, shoddy workmanship was not paid for in full. What we did, like I said to you, all the consultants would only certify things for that's work done and work that's passed. What we did when we started on the project, when we came to Mr. Bock, is that we instituted a methodology of having approved samples. So a sample of plastering would be approved, sample of painting would be approved, sample of the flooring would be approved. If any workmanship did not meet that sample, then the conveyor would be informed not to pay that. There were many instances, and if you go through the minutes of the meeting, you'll see there are many instances where we point out to the contractor that we are not happy with the quality of the work, where we tell him that remedial action has to be done, and in some cases, because of the lack of skills in the Northern Cape, that remedial work was done 3 or 4 times at the behest of the consultant team. So there was many instances where we pointed out this to the OSM, and this is part of the problem here on the project, because the lack of skills and the lack of people who are able to do the job, and them having to do the job to certain parts over and over and over. But
okay, no, that's fine. I think it goes back to Comrade Roy's first question: due diligence.
No, a third area was a more in-depth investigation as to whether these professionals signed off that work was done that in fact was not done. It's a big question mark. It's an area I believe that needs to be investigated. I don't think we can just leave it there. So I'm making a list of things I believe require further investigation, and that certainly does. What concerned me when you were speaking was that you referred to vandalism and looting. Was nothing done by the department, public works, health department, whoever, to secure the premises between Mr. Park contract and the Nazi contract? Was the site simply abandoned? And the extent of the damage done?
No, Chair. After the contract was terminated, we employed our own security on site, because recall that the site was technically or contractually in possession of the contractor. But at the time when we terminated the contract, we deployed our own security on site. And this was actually part of the reason for the court battles between the department and the contractor, because the contractor was claiming that by deploying our own security on site, we had unlawfully deprived it of the site without any judicial process. And then there was a lengthy court battle with regard to the possession of the site.
If you deployed your own security, why was there continuing vandalism and looting?
Yes, what actually happened is all these thefts and all that were reported on site were reported to the police, and up to now we still don't know. Actually, we don't have any report from the police with regard to that. But we did deploy our own security.
Can I come in? I think, Chair, we have explained also in the document here on a detailed basis from when we started the issue of deploying the security. That's, I thought, Papi will explain that. That by a court interdict, these guys were restored again on site and we had to move out until the court battle. And that court battle took that long, over 2 years. That's the reason why we could not be on site anymore.
That's fine. I think I'll give Comrade Shiran, but like Comrade Roy was, let's leave that past. It has so many grey areas that I believe we'll still need to go into. Comrade Shiran.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want us to refer back to the document that you've given us. If you can just go to page 11, there's a clarity that I want to seek here. Page 11, on the expected final cost. The second last paragraph. Reads, when you add the termination amount, 340 million, which is the amount paid to date to the first contractor, to the expected final amount of 449.6 million, we anticipate the total cost to be 790 million. I just want to understand that this 790 million is something that you talk about the Vista Park alone, not in Inyas. Am I right, HOT, or both? Okay. If then, if that's both, according to my understanding, when you check this document, is that when you terminate the contract, an amount of 340. It has already been spent, I cannot say maybe paid, spent towards this project, to Inyas, in view of Vista Park. As you were correctly saying that the contractor had most of the time will come to want money, just collecting. And I just want to check, because the work was not properly done, and money was paid, are we just going to, the department is just going to leave that money aside, or is there any way to get back that money? Because there's no work that has happened. I just want to hear your view in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As we indicated in Upington, in Kimberley, when you're in your visit, I don't know why I'm in Upington. What we indicated is that we had initiated the report of Kobodo, and the first one was the scoping, but we said it's not taking us, because we want to be able to account for the taxpayers' money, and if possible, wherever the wrongdoing, to do the prosecution thereof and to recover. Because you can't say, because the company is liquidated, there's nothing we can do. How can we get proper advice legally? How to even go to attach the directors who are involved in this, if maybe. But look at all options that are there. Hence, we have had and instructed Kogodo again to give us a clear outline on new terms of reference. To exactly, we've got a copy of the terms of reference today, because we promised you and Kimberley will bring it. So for them to work in detail and give us now a report that clearly advises us, and that will help us in any action that we want to take. But our attempt is to make sure any fruitless or money spent fraudulently must be recovered.
All right. I want us to move to closer to the present. Dr. Rabi and then Comrade Joy.
I think it's deplorable that we were only handed the report of Kubota today. If we had time to study this, I think we would have had more insight into the problems. But we take note of what he said there, but I think Kubota could have been invaluable to us if we had prior exposure to this report. Thank you.
Kubota?
And did you change your tune? I think it's in time for Kubota report. I'm pleased you've changed your tune, because last time we met you in Kimberley, you weren't too concerned about recouping the money we've lost, and you weren't too concerned about going after directors. So perhaps I'm pleased we've achieved something, maybe, Chair, a little bit of pressure from this committee, that you now indeed wish to recoup the money the state has lost. But can you just confirm what investigations we've had, what investigations we're having, what investigations we're going to have? Now, go right back. Was there an investigation on the bottom of the scorpions? If so, what happened to that investigation? Number two,
there's this Kubota report.
But I've read somewhere you're unhappy with this report. I've read somewhere you're unhappy with this report. Now you tell us you're going back to the same people that you're unhappy with. Number two. Number three, when you briefed the NCOP, the Deputy Minister of Health, I think, promised a very full investigation within 4 weeks. Do we have that results of that very full investigation? So that's, I'm a bit confused about these investigations and what their status is. If you go all the way back, was there scorpions? What happened to that? Two, Kubota again, why, if you're unhappy with him? Three, your deputy minister, where are we with that promise of an investigation?
Honorable Chair, once again, the first report was a scoping report. Now, it was not a forensic audit. Now, upon the issues they highlight, we want them to go deeper into it, and also making sure that they assist us to resolve these issues. So if you look at that report, it's more scoping, highlighting all the areas that are there. Now we say we instruct them to do a forensic audit. So that's where we said it's impossible now to implement some of the things they said, because we don't have a thorough, a deep forensic investigation in the whole process. On the issue of the scorpions, I wouldn't be much sure. Maybe some of the colleagues will help, because I indicated last time that I joined the department in October. But I'm trying here not to say that we're not responsible for it. Hence, we said we act on mainly on the information that we've extracted and get all the documented proof on issues. That's how mainly our response is.
The Deputy Minister, you're unaware of that?
I was in that meeting, but I'm not sure. Maybe the department can answer. But all I know, one of the
Deputy Minister promising an investigation.
I was in the briefing that, yes, I was there.
Now, is there a result of that investigation?
I'm not aware of that. Maybe the Department of Health will respond on that. But what I know, the other thing,
too many investigations, I think we'll consider ourselves, but I think maybe we've got to make our own recommendation as to who should investigate. I don't know if Kubota can do a proper forensic investigation. I think it's simply going to cost you even more money than we've already spent on this scoping investigation. So, but we'll discuss that at the committee.
Yeah, Comrade MEC, you see, one thing that we struggle with in this committee is for government departments to go to private firms to do investigations on their behalf. When the state has the capacity, so the SIU. I just don't understand whether there are people in government who have private interests in giving out these kind of responsibilities to people who charge higher fees than the SIU. When the SIU charges you less and gives you a much more comprehensive report, not only in terms of the problems, but also in terms of how to solve them, and even to be there to assist you in resolving those problems. But the state government departments leave the SIU and go elsewhere. I mean, we really struggle with this. But anyway, I want us to move to the present, except to say, comrade, I'm disappointed because
You see, going through the Kobodo report, Comrade Roy, if you check on page 18, paragraph 3, it solves the mystery around which we were wrangling for a long time, that actually the letter notifying Vista that they won the contract was signed by Mr. Slimel. But the first paragraph also indicates that the normal surety for contracts was 10%, but in this case it was reduced to 10%, to 2%. And actually Vista submitted a check of that 2%, which was not even bank guaranteed. And they only provided a bank guaranteed check 2 months after they were given the contract and handed over the site. So it tells you that the uniqueness of Mr. Scholes comes into play. But the question of the letter, I mean, it's for Mr. Slimel to dispute what is on page 18, that he signed together with an unknown person who signed on behalf of Mr. W. Kruger on the 26th of August. So surely Kobodo must be having this letter, because if they say the letter was dated 26th August 2005, it means they have the letter with them. Or they actually saw the letter. No, it can't be in the pack. I mean, we've been asking about the letter and you never told us it's here. So, I mean, it's like we must discover it for you to confirm it's here. I mean, we've been asking, where is the letter? Who can find the letter? And nobody knew where the letter was. No, they say it's in the pack. I don't know which pack. Which pack?
Yeah. Chair, perhaps I should explain. I think Mr. Slimela earlier on explained the process, that after the tender board had set, they usually notify the department by way of a letter to say such and such a company has been awarded. And then the department will then notify that company. So this is the letter of notification to the company that has been appointed. And it is in the pack, indeed, the one that was signed by Mr. Slimela.
All right, but the one sent by the board to Mr. Slimel, that's the missing one? Ah, okay. All right, so there's no smoking gun. There is a gun, but there's no smoke. All right. I think that past, Comrade, you can see, it is too gray. And I think we will still need to apply our minds in terms of how we deal with certain segments and certain sections thereof to get clarity around these matters. Can we come closer to the present? Comrade Roy, you want to continue, or you are a historical man?
I'll do it. If you want me to, I'll start with...
Sure.
I'll start this segment with the very first question I asked earlier on. Has due diligence been done on the current contractors in Yahtzee? Has due diligence been done?
Say, why I'm asking the question?
Oh, it is obvious. Just waiting for an answer. Was due diligence done on INYAT? HOD?
Chairperson, I would request the CFO to answer that one, because I know there's specifically grades that were requested to be done, because, and that must be confirmed by the CIDP, which tells you it's due diligence. But the CFO can deal with that.
Thank you, Chair. There's also in the PEC, or the letter, the first letter,
when we explain in the process when it started, or the tendering process when it started with Inyaki.
Where is that?
New contractor, page 9. And Chair, maybe I should just go through that. That there was a two envelope system that was implemented with the procurement of this contract. First being to check the in terms of functionality, and then once they've passed functionality, then the second stage being price and evaluation. Maybe it would be better to go through the report like the HOD did. It said a revised procurement strategy was approved by the, on page 9.
Page 9, second paragraph.
Then it says, the heading says new contractor. Following the confirmation of the cancellation of the contract and the evaluation, the department advertised the new open tender for the completion of the new mental hospital on the 28th of January 2011, with the closing date of the 25th of February 2011. 15 bidders expressed interest, and there's an annexure. All bidders were found to be non-responsive. Also, there's an annexure.
What does that mean, non-responsive?
There were certain criteria that were set in the specifications which they did not meet. A revised procurement strategy was then approved by the HOD to re-advertise the bid. In addition, the HOD approved the limitation of the tender to target only CIDB grade 9 contractors by virtue of the value of the project. It was also resolved that for the purpose of this tender, a two envelope system will be used, which is functionality and price, and that no JVs be allowed to minimize the risks. The second tender was advertised on the 20th of September 2011, closing on the 17th of October 2011. Of the 24 grade 9 bidders invited, and there's an annexure to that, only 13 retained the tenders. There's also an annexure to that effect. A technical committee which evaluated envelope 1 set on the 17th of November. They then recommended 10 out of the 12 tenderers. The two that were excluded were Vusela Construction, because and Armstrong ZPC JV, because they, in any case, scored below a minimum functionality score. The BEC set on the 23rd of November 2011, and only 3 bidders were found to be responsive, and there's minutes also attached to that.
Who are these bidders? I thought you would have listed them. To list those who did not qualify and leave those who qualified does not assist in terms of information. Who are these three?
Annexure M on the minutes of the BEC.
Saying it would have been much helpful. Instead of listing Vusela and Armstrong, they are relevant to the information that we see. So which are these? I want to hear the names so I can write them down. I have to go to the minutes.
It was Inyati, Tramcon, Sanyati, Ruacon.
Twit, we're writing. Yeah, Inyati. The second one?
Tramcon Construction.
Can you spell that?
T-R-E-N-C-O-N.
Okay. And the third one?
Sanyati Ruacon.
Can you repeat that?
It was Inyati Construction, Tramcon Construction, and Sanyati / Ruacon JV.
I wanted them to be here. It would be much more helpful. Sanyati,
Tramcon Construction, and Sanyati Ruacon JV. The BAC set on the, that was the BEC. The BAC set on the 25th of November 2011, and recommended Inyasi as the highest point scorer. Appointment of the contractor was done on the 28th of November 2011, and there's an appointment letter on Annexure N.
Right. The person was due diligence. Was due diligence done?
Was Greneka not in the running at all? Because they were the preferred bidder the first time round.
They were in the running, but they were found to be non-responsive because I think.
Why were they not responsive?
Because the issue of the
text. Why was that overlooked the second time? Number one, and number two, you're saying here that no JVs would be allowed, but you did allow one. There's a JV in your list of three. Sorry. I'm just curious about Greneka. Why did you not simply appoint them? Why did you have to reopen tenders?
You're asking, sir, about
Greneka.
Yeah. They were in the running. They were considered non-responsive because the tenderer did not complete the contract participation goal stated in the special conditions of the contract.
Now, have you truly done due diligence with regard to the current contracts? I ask that question because since their appointment have been downgraded from CIDB grade 9GB to 7GB. That's a downgrade, and why? Is that not an indication of concern as to their competency to do the work? Number one, I'm saying perhaps no due diligence. And if you can tell us why the downgrade, perhaps that'll give us some insight into their competency. And two, we are told that already they are falling behind schedule and that their current monthly expenditure is 50% less than the cash flow projections. That is from a briefing given to the NCOP. So that is why I'm asking whether due diligence has been done or whether, Chair, we are not repeating the same old thing. Even when we were on site, we were told by somebody, I can't remember who it was, I can't recall, that they were falling behind schedule. Falling behind schedule has been confirmed by the briefing to the NCOP. So that is why I'm asking the question, was due diligence done? Because it looks to me like we're going the same old route, and this thing will never be completed.
All right, was due diligence done?
Sir, I will say yes. There was, as I said, we use a two-envelope system. First one being functionality, and those that pass functionality only then went through to the second evaluation being for
what is the relevance of the downgrade of Inyasi from grade 9 to grade 7? What is the significance? What is the meaning of that?
We only invited grade 9 tenderers. And only those, that's why we called it a closed tender.
No, that's fine. I'm saying, what is the significance of the downgrade from grade 9 to 7? What is the significance of that? What does it mean?
Honorable Chair, what it means is that bank balance has changed. When we went into the whole thing, meeting in your CCIDB, because we had closed meetings, we wanted to resolve. We even looked at the option of termination immediately, but we knew it's the most expensive and that we can't delay the project further.
If you had done due diligence, surely you would have looked at their bank balance.
Can I?
And the reason why they've been downgraded is because I believe they're transferring funds from one project to another project. Now, if you'd done due diligence, you'd have realized that and would have started asking questions about their financial viability and therefore their competency to complete this project. You didn't do the due diligence and we're going the same route.
Honorable Chair, we did because we invited only grade 9s. Grade 9s, you must have a bank balance that is at a certain level according to the CIDB. And what happened here? That's why I said, if I can just briefly take you through. What happened here with our discussions, we find after the awarding of the contract, they took 40 million out of their account to help one of their companies that is functioning, and I'm not sure in what province, and that immediately affected their credit. But now they've been reinstated and backdated to January by the CIDP. So they are grade 9 as we speak. So their financials are okay as we speak. And I must indicate, on this project, there's proper management. And during the NCOP meeting, we also reported that there that there's now a team, a joint team, that's having national health, the provincial health, and our department. We have put a lot of risk issues on board. We've got resident engineers and things like that now. There is a proper management. Hence, we feel this one we will deliver. But their finances are in order. They've been reinstated into grade 9.
All right. Let's assume that that was a temporary scary situation, because you headed, they were formally appointed on the 28th of November 2011, and by January 40 million has moved out of their account. Well, if they were here, we would actually check whether actually they didn't put that 40 million from somewhere for purposes of qualifying, and immediately after qualifying, then return the money where it belongs. Because then that becomes risky. Very, very risky going forward. But I would have preferred you to say the project is now better managed than to say properly, because then you are talking perfection. And I would be wary to you to use such emphatic terms. We got a sense that they have already actually requested for a 12-month extension. Is that correct?
Not that I'm aware of. We don't have such requests on our documents.
Can someone from your team remember that request? Because when we were there, we were told there was going to be a meeting the following day to discuss the request for an extension. Is there a request for an extension by Nyas?
Mr. Chairman, as the project manager for the present contract, as on my desk, there is no extension of time claim or notification for 12 months. So no, there's no extension of time claim on my desk to the value of 12 months at this present time.
And the accounting officer, there's nothing on my desk. Whoever does it is an illegal one.
This is the report made to the NCOP. May I read it?
Yes.
Very brief. Mr. Sokacha, who's Mr. Sokacha? Mr. Sokacha said the contractor was falling behind schedule and current monthly expenditure is 50% less than the cash flow projections. You also made reference to the budget, which you'll deal with later. But that's what you said. That was just in August. We're only now a few months down the line. And that was the comment, falling behind schedule. It is also what we were told on site, Chair, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
Can I respond? Represent the report that was tabled in the NCOP was, when was that report? It was in, when we appeared before I'm not sure when was it, in July. In August. That was a joint report that was given between Health and Public Works. Yes.
You said they were falling behind schedule. You were told that. Are they falling behind schedule? At that point, are they falling behind schedule?
Mr. Chairman, if I could answer that. Presently, the contractor is about 1 month behind his present program. And we have...
Okay, no, that's fine. So the principle, they were falling behind schedule in August. And even now, they're still falling behind schedule, let's say, by 1 month. Is that the point you're making?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. Now, in the just to piggyback on what Comrade Roy was saying, there were concerns raised about the lack of capital budget for this project. Do we have the money that it is ultimately going to cost us to build that hospital? Because once again, from the presentation there, it says no capital budget currently available for this project. Expenditure being paid from budget from another hospital revitalization project. Has things changed since that fateful day of August the 8th when you made this presentation?
Chair, thank you. When the Department of Health realized that we might be running short of the funds to complete the project as per arranged in 2014, we have started requesting money from the Department of Health National.
When you re-advertised, there was no budget. From what Comrade Chilwana read, you had clear estimate of what it was going to cost going forward, and then you went out on tender. Was there no budget at that point?
Yes, Chair, it's correct. There was no budget, but we were facing a situation where the project had started and we needed to complete it. And Chair, you'll remember that when we started the project, there was a need for a project. So as the Department of Health, the need still was existing. Hence, we felt we needed to request additional funding in order to complete the budget. And this is exactly what we explained in our last meeting when we met with the Select Committee. Thank you.
Well, we're not there. Can you explain to us then what happened?
There are two questions. The first question is that I need to explain because the current committee was not there. And then the second question is where is the money going to come
from? In terms of that very question, because I'm sure you explained to the committee where the money was coming from. So I was saying explain in relation to his question because we're not there. So just answer that question.
Okay. I'm going to hand over to the project manager. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. When we were notified that the Department of Public Works needs to go out on tender, we approached National Health. We wrote a letter. The HOD wrote a letter to National Health, indicating that we are going to run short of capital to implement the project in 2012. But unfortunately, at that stage, we couldn't get a response. But with the budget estimate that we had, the department was going to have the contractor on site to run for this particular financial year. Unfortunately, our budget, the budget for hospital rewrite, was cut to come to this financial year. I think it's all the provinces. And we lost about 80 million as the Northern Cape Department of Health in terms of hospital revitalization grant. But we went back prior to the submission of the project implementation plans, which guides the National Health on the provincial budget allocation on this particular grant to indicate how much each and every hospital is going to get. And we indicated that because we don't have money, we are going to request the use of a budget from one of our hospitals, which is DR, so that the National Health can grant us an approval in this financial year, knowing that we don't have the budget for mental health. We are going to use DR allocated budget till the money is being allocated. And those letters are present in our package.
You're asking for approval, but have you not? Is it not true you've already been using money designated for Kuruman, Hosmas, Burbinder R? You've already been using that money without anybody's approval.
We
are diverting funds from those three facilities. Now are you going to ask for approval for something you've done already?
The project implementation plans are issued out prior to the approvals of the budget by National Health. We issued out the project implementation plans in February this year to the National DG of Health. We didn't start using the money before writing a letter to request for an approval. We issued out the project implementation plans together with that letter.
But you had already appointed a contract. So it was a fait accompli. And you see, comrades, at the back of my mind, I'm thinking, are we not looking at an unauthorized expenditure at the end for this department, whether this year or next year or 2 years later?
Yes, my information is, you must correct me, is you've been diverting funds from Kuruman to R and Postmasburg without approval. Now, am I wrong?
The only project affected is DR Hospital budget allocation, not any other project.
Okay, may I look at some? Because I also have in the NCOP. Kuruman Hospital, you recognize that? Kuruman Hospital says, it's talking about delays. Issue of concern. Diversion of funds to mental health shall result in delays on the construction of Kuruman Hospital. Diversion of funds from Kuruman. You say not only the arch. Kuruman.
Okay.
And concerns raised there that those projects will be held back. Why? Because you're illegally diverting funds from one project to another project.
That report says because there's no money for mental health in this financial year, then it has got an impact on the starting of other projects being Kuruman and Postmansburg. It does not say we are taking the money because there is no budget allocated for Kuruman Hospital. It's not planned for implementation in this financial year.
But public works, I mean, how do you issue out tenders without having checked with the Department of Health whether they have money for that project or not? Because I see here in their letter, the 9th January 2012, sent to the National Department, paragraph 2, sentence number 2, the Department of Roads and Public Works has awarded a tender and handed oversight to a contractor. So it's like the Department of Health is chasing behind Public Works. Public Works has already issued out a tender, awarded people, handed them over the site, they must start building, and yet you don't have the money. How does it work? I want to check with Public Works. You just bullman free, you just issue tenders and say you pay. Whether they have money or not, they will see to finish.
Chair, if I can respond to that, we do not do that. We received a letter, or we had written to the Department of Health in 2011 already. With a procurement strategy on what we intended to do on the mental health. They responded on the 30th of August to confirm that we can go ahead with the implementation and confirmed if I can just maybe quote,
yeah.
The department will allocate the 327 million budget required for the to complete the project. So at the time, and then they requested the cash flow projections, of course.
Who signed that letter?
It was the former HOD for health.
Where is he?
He's not here, unfortunately. Sorry, former acting head of department.
Where is he in the department? Well, former acting head, it means he was some middle-ranking manager in the department. Is he still in the department?
No, Chair, he left the department.
After committing, I mean, where did he get this money that he said was there? Because your letter of January, in fact, it's not you. Is that Mr. Faith?
Yes.
Was he the acting DG?
Yes, he was the acting DG. Yes.
But then he writes the letter in January that seemed to suggest that Public Works just handed over a site to a contractor when the department has no money. And yet, last year he wrote a letter to say, yes, we'll have the money.
I'm not the only person concerned that maybe funds are being diverted illegally from one project to another project. The NCOP is equally concerned. Let me reach you again from Postmasburg Hospital. Talks about construction of a district new district hospital. Let me read it to you. Issues of concern. Project budget. Now I assume it's the project budget for this hospital, Postmasburg. Project budget might be used to complete mental health hospital. Now that's to me very clear. The funds for this hospital may be diverted to somewhere else. That is very clear. I still say, like the NCOP, I think you've been diverting funds. At the very least, it's unauthorized, it could be illegal.
Okay, Comrade Shula.
Chairperson, thank you. Is the writer to what Comrade Foy is asking to the Department of Health when they are diverting these monies from one area to another to cover up for the new mental hospital in Kimberley, to check the mandate of the department is to ensure that all South Africans have facilities in terms of medical facilities. And then what are the plans for the... I know this question, Chair, might be relevant to be asked by a portfolio committee on health, but to check in terms of the financial viability of the Department of Health and the services that they are providing to the communities out there. The people of Kuruman, Postmasburg, they are... What's going to happen to them? Still going to wait for another 10 to 15 years until we get another money to build this hospital? Because it seems like it's fiscal dumping in terms of the financial term, what is called fiscal dumping. The department, seemingly when they see that this money is not spent properly in this area, then they will shift the money to another area to be spent. And it is not allowed in terms of treasury regulations, in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. It is not allowed. But I'm happy because the MEC is here, so that measures should be taken. I think we should be able to take an example, just to make one example in one case, because this is violation of the legislation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Just to clarify again, I'm sure it's a bit of English. There's no budget for Postmasburg, Kuruman, and we want to put it on record that it's only the DR hospital that is affected. And the DR hospital, as you're speaking, progress is continuing. They are building the hospital. It's not that we took money, we stopped the DR hospital. The DR hospital is continuing, they are building that hospital. So on record, there's no budget for Postmasburg. There's no budget for Kuruman. That is a project that we're envisaging in the long run that we're going to try. It's a bit of English that is saying we take the budget from Postmasburg. The only
so you were able to get agreement from National to divert some money from DR to complete the Kimberley Mental Hospital?
Yes.
Okay. Do we now have an idea in terms of the possible completion date of that hospital? What timelines do we have? Nyasi was given 2 years, November 2011 to November 2012 to November 2013. That's 2 years. No, I'm told they're 1 month behind, so it will be December 2008. What is our projected timeline?
The current projected completion date for INYATSI as it stands, and the contractual completion date for INYATSI as it stands is March 2014. The commencement date of whilst the contract was awarded to them in November, the site was handed over to them on the 21st of December, and the commencement of the contract was on the 7th of January. So they will be completing, the completion date right now is March 2014.
All right, I want us to move towards the completion. We must complete in time. We must not be like Inyazi. We have escalation of time. We must actually complete earlier than our projected time. Yes,
yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to check on the completion for you to confirm that the total anticipated is the 1.08 billion. That is, there won't be any additional amount to that effect. In terms of, say, the completion date, it will be 2014 March. Just to confirm on what it is here on page 11. And maybe, Chair, to check with the department in terms of the initiation of the project, when you minus this 1.08 billion to the initiation of the 290, how much is the variation, the loss that we have lost in terms of not being able to have delivered the project as estimated? Thank you.
Dr. Rabi, let's just note the question because we're moving towards the closure.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chair. So 1.1 billion, if I may round it up, yes, it's the projected to date, but remember we do these projections every month when we submit the certificate. So it can go up, it can either go up or down, but to date as we speak, that's where it's standing at the moment.
Have you ever had a situation where projections go down? Because I suspect they probably go.
Yes, if we have variation orders whereby we have to omit some of the stuff, then it will go down. Because it's not only additional work that we need to do, but there might be something that we've allowed for in the document that we might not have to do. Or maybe we change the spec and then we do it for less.
Okay. All right. Dr. Rabi?
Just a general comment. I think March 2014, Chair, if as a layman, I hope we attain 2014, but I have my doubts whether they are completed by 2014. But I hope they do for the sake of the community of the Northern Cape, but I'm not so sure, Mr. Chairman.
Just switch on your mic and just pull it closer to you.
Two quick things. I'm still not concerned. I'm still concerned about the possible diverting of funds. I'm looking at a record briefing to the NCRP, the department, contrary to the advice from National Treasury, said there was no budget available, and there had been shifting of funds to pay the costs from the DAR revitalization budget. So at least it's been shifted from DAR without authority of National Treasury, number one. Number two, I think many of these things, three or four areas we've focused on, need thorough investigation, possibly from the SIU. But we cannot. We have to learn lessons from Northern Cape to ensure that the trillion rand we expect to pay out over the next 20 or 30 years on infrastructure of this kind is not money wasted, as we are wasting money with this facility.
All right. I just want to check Comrade Davis, just to differentiate the voice. Yeah, I just want to check if there's anything you would want to put across, because I suspect we might be coming to the end of the engagement. If there's anything you would want to put throughout, allow you to do so.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. Maybe I must just take a few seconds to say to the committee, I think what the committee is doing is assisting everybody else. And one of the things I hope we can achieve out of what we are doing is what Comrade Roy was saying. Because last night when I spoke to the team, we were preparing ourselves for today. I have made the same comment to the team that there's two things that is interesting for me, which I said to them last night. Here you are sitting together, public works, health, everybody else. Why is it that we can't do that in Kimberley? Being together, look at problems together, look at solving problems together. That's what I raised with them last night. But second place also said, let this process be a lesson for us for moving forward. These mistakes must be the lessons for us moving forward. And therefore, whatever the committee will decide, I'm sure will be in the interests of the people outside. And whatever the consequences might be, I don't have any issue around it. My only wish is that we have to complete this hospital and put this history behind us. But important so, we must also understand what that history means. Thanks, Chair.
Comrades?
Thanks, Sir Person. I also just want to say thanks to the committee. I think this is a lesson for all of us. I usually say to my staff, you know, I also don't want to leave a legacy that is, because these things have got a history to follow you. So we on the foot to say that let's do the right thing all the time. Because you might be called back 10, 20 years after you have been MEC. But I must say I'm a bit confident that Chairperson and the members of the committee now that there is a closer relationship between ourselves, Public Works, and the National Department of Health, because there is a joint committee that has been established, and everybody is concerned now. As we have mentioned about the month that the contractor is behind, all of us are on the ground. We go and visit the structure. The last time I was there, since the select committee was there, and now that when Scopa was there, I was a bit very impressed to see this movement. But really, everybody is on the toes. We really appreciate your assistance, because nobody wants to leave a legacy that is going to follow you.
Thanks. All right. Thanks, comrades, for your input. We always, when we have these engagements, want the presence of the political leadership, because at the end of the day, administration serves politics or political objectives. So your presence and your commitments to ensure that officials would deliver on the issues that we've discussed is important. I also thank my comrades. It's Friday. Friday tends to be a very slippery day. And also that is Limela for having made it. Very few people in your position want to set foot again to come and account for things that happened under their watch. I'm not sure what the committee will decide, but for purposes of looking back, if you are required, we would let you know. And I think the candidness with which you spoke to the issues has been very helpful in actually opening that yellow hole that they were all looking into and not being able to see what is there. I must say that, like Comrade Roy said, our major concern is that we need to learn lessons out of this. If government say with 1 trillion rand that we want to use for infrastructure development, and yet our ability to manage projects, capital projects, is not up to scratch, it means that we're going to lose a lot of that 1 trillion rand to poor planning, poor management, and deliver less of the projects that need to be delivered. Infrastructure development is central to the development of any country. So the provision of infrastructure must be seen as being very central to the efforts of taking the country to another level. So the extent to which we're able to manage this project with efficiency is very, very critical. And all we can do is to learn out of this, because when we left Kimberley, we went to Gauteng, the Zola or Jabulani Hospital. Same story. We're coming from Queenstown, Komani Mental Hospital. Same story. In terms of how we award contracts to people who will be able to deliver to our people.
That is the ability to think in the interest of the people and not in the interest of the few directors of a particular company. I think that would be very, 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 very critical. So we want to say that, like Lenin says, a clever person is not he who does not make mistakes, but it's he who makes mistakes and corrects them. So let's correct them. Then we'll be Leninists, or at least we'll be students, or following in his footsteps. Thanks very much. Comrades, next week is Mampara week. All right? Next week is Mampara week. Nothing for the committee. Me and you, yes, will be out there. I mean, I'm here.